We're good? Good afternoon. The February 13th, 2008 meeting of the Senate's Public Safety Budget Division is called to order. Thank you, everybody, for showing up at the very first meeting of the new session. We have a whole collection of bonding proposals that we'll be hearing today and next Monday. Then on Wednesday, we will meet to put together our list of priority items that we'll send over to the bonding committee. So, members, if you would be, I'll probably say this at the end of the day, too, if I remember, but be prepared for a really long Monday and maybe even into the evening as we try to get through all of the ones that are coming to our committee. Today we're going to start with a proposal from Senator Saxhog and the folks at Grand Rapids. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This binding request is from the Grand Rapids Fire Department. It's for a regional hazmat training facility. You know, hazardous materials, fires need to be taken care of in a timely manner, particularly in northern Minnesota, where we have the largest unpolluted aquifer in the lower 48 states.
Pull up that microphone, Mr. Senator. My head is so plugged up, I'm not sure I could hear you anymore.
Can you hear me now?
No.
Okay.
Aquifer.
Something about an aquifer.
Yeah, that's what I want to make sure that I... How about now?
Better.
All right. Well, in northern Minnesota, the upper third of the state, we have a large bog up there, Glacial Lakes, and it's the largest unpolluted aquifer in the lower 48 states. The largest used to be the Florida Everglades, but that's now polluted. So, again, hazmat is one way of keeping that from becoming polluted. And this has regional significance, and I have with me Fire Chief, Grand Rapids Fire Chief Steve Flaherty and First Assistant Chief Marlon Halverson from the Grand Rapids Fire Department, and they're going to tell you a little more about the project.
Okay. Who'd like to go first?
That'd be me, Madam Chair. Thank you. Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to address the committee.
Are you Chief Flaherty?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
The Grand Rapids Fire Department, as a state contracted provider of chemical assessment mitigation, has determined a need for the Northern Minnesota Training Facility for all emergency response agencies in northern Minnesota. This request is for $1.4 million in state funding for the pre-design, design, construct, furnish, and equipping of a new northern Minnesota training facility located within the city of Grand Rapids. Total cost of this project is $2.9 million. The purpose of the project is to provide a state-of-the-art venue for various emergency response agencies training from a state, regional, county, and local perspective, sponsored by the state and city emergency response agencies. Also to address the response risk of northern Minnesota in areas of chemical assessment mitigation, environmental emergencies, and fire protection. Planning process has determined that the Northern Minnesota Regional Training Facility should be located at the Itasca County seat, which is the city of Grand Rapids. This is the central location of northern Minnesota from the western border to the eastern border of Minnesota and also from the northern border of Minnesota and Canada. The planning process also determined that the local hotels and food establishments would be sufficient to support the needs in the area to provide large training or emergency events hosted by the training facility. The cost of operating the new facility would be funded by the City of Grand Rapids, along with monies from the State of Minnesota Chemical Assessment Team contract budget and training fees. A little history of the project. 2.4 acres of tax-forfeited land for this project was acquired within the City of Grand Rapids in 2001, and the original CIP was developed in 2004. And back in October of 2005, we made presentations to the Department of Public Safety and ultimately were invited to the Capitol in the 2006 session to give presentations to the House and Senate Finance Committees. And through the omnibus tax bill, Taconite Homestead Credit Fund disbursement, we were awarded $115,000 in appropriations for this project. Under the needs assessment of the project, it's become a higher priority for the emergency service providers in northern Minnesota as the potential for disastrous events continue to grow. with major transportation corridors of highways and railroads passing through northern Minnesota, the potential for a major emergency disaster is high. Major waterways such as the Mississippi River and the aquifer that Senator Saxhog made reference to pose great targets for chemical disasters that could greatly affect the environmentally sound areas of Minnesota. The availability of a regionally located state-of-the-art emergency response center would directly lower the impact of any major emergency disaster. No operating costs would be requested for this project from the state. The cost of operating the new facility would be funded by the City of Grand Rapids, along with monies, again, from the State of Minnesota Chemical Assessment Team contract budget and training fees collected. So at this time, Assistant Fire Chief Marlon Halverson and I would entertain any questions that Madam Chair may have or the other committee members.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Did I... you've received some appropriation already for this. Is that... did I hear that right?
Madam Chair, that is correct. Through the omnibus tax bill, which was House File 785 and Senate File 318 in the 06 session, the Taconite Homestead Credit Fund disbursement, we were awarded $115,000 to continue with the pre-design and design portion of that project.
And you're asking for $1.9 million, and the total project is?
The request is for $1.4 million, and the total project cost is $2.9
million. Okay. And, Chief, are you ready to go? You know, if we get the money, you can have some shovels in the dirt.
Yes. Yeah, land has been secured, Madam Chair, and we are waiting on funding and other sources so that we can begin the project.
Other questions from the committee? Oh, okay. Senator Saxhog, you don't have your bill introduced yet, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So even though you are, the language that we have, the copy that we have is for $1.1 million, we have an amendment to make it the $1.4 that you're requesting. Can Senate Counsel just tell us when we put our list together to send to the bonding committee, can we just put the correct amount in?
Madam Chair, I'll pass these on to the appropriate people.
Okay, great. Let's just do it that way then. Okay. Any other questions? If not, thank you very much. We'll be figuring out our list of priorities on week from today.
Thank
same
you.
Time, same place. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Senator Wergen, training facility in Princeton.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for hearing all these bills concerning public training facilities and things of that nature. They're very important in our state because we value what our police officers do. I am here with Senate File 2330, which is a $3 million request for a public safety training facility in Princeton. And with me, I have Mayor Jeremy Riddle, Fire Chief Jim Roxbury, and Police Chief Brian Payne. Remembered his name. I was just telling him earlier that you sit at this table and you draw a total blank as to names sometimes, so hey.
Yes, indeed you do.
Anyway, Madam Chair, most of you are very familiar with the Monticello Nuclear Plant. I think some of you just recently even took a trip to the Monticello Nuclear Plant to tour it, and that's part of what makes this a really important bill. If you're familiar with how emergency services operate out of the Monticello facility, there are radiuses from the facility that are designed where specific training has to take place, and the public service agencies, the police, fire, everything have to be involved for specific training that deals with nuclear disaster. And Princeton is one of the cities, small cities, that fall within this range of training for nuclear disaster at the Monticello nuclear plant. So that makes a real unique situation for training here. And the other thing that's very unique to Princeton is that they are also a pandemic flu center. And so there are some specific reasons that we're here today, and the request is for $3 million. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to our mayor, Jeremy Riddle.
Welcome, Mayor.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. As Senator Wergen mentioned, we are the relocation center for any Monticello nuclear incident, should there be any problems at the plant, as well as any health pandemics in the state, inoculation center for the flu and other issues. One of the other things that makes us a little unique is that Princeton, with our location, is right on the edge of three separate state patrol districts. We border two different counties, so we're on the very edge of the sheriff's districts. Our fire department serves several townships in three different counties, and so we are a regional center for lots of different public safety aspects, whether that be through law enforcement or fire protection or any of those other types of aspects of public safety. In front of you, you have a copy of a PowerPoint presentation that I gave to the Capital Investment Committee in St. Cloud last fall, and I don't have time to go through all of it, but I just want to hit some of the highlights that that I have mentioned in there. Some of those, as I mentioned, based on our location. The next closest police department is 14 miles away in Elk River. Zimmerman does not have their own police department, so the sheriff's department covers that for them. There's a slide in there that shows the training sessions that we've been able to have up to this point have been being held in council chambers or any other place that we can find a location. Next week, the fire department is actually going to be using the Moose Lodge. The state fire marshal is coming in and holding a class, and a lot of the regional departments are joining us, and they're actually using the Moose Lodge for their classrooms. But while training is certainly one aspect of this, the other thing that I want to keep in mind and highlight to you is that this is not just a training facility. We're also looking at building decontamination facilities, rooms and office space that State Patrol can use when they're processing DWI arrests, areas that sheriff's deputies can come in and use facilities to write their reports, get in out of the 20 below weather or the thunderstorms or any of those types of things when they're a long distance away from their home base. They already come into our facility and use whatever free desk space we can give them, but if we have a secure location where they can actually bring a detainee in with them and process some of those things in a safer area, that would be a huge benefit. I do have, and you have copies of them, a letter of support from the Mille Lacs County Sheriff's Office, as well as resolutions of support from neighboring townships and North Ambulance, which does a lot of work with our guys as well in the training areas. I don't know if you've got copies of, I see a couple of them being passed around there. And as we were driving down here, I got a phone call saying that we had received a couple more that I wasn't able to pick up before we came. But just showing that other agencies in the area really see the value of having additional emergency operations center, additional decontamination facilities. We're looking at building next to our airport, which is just about not quite half a mile south of 95. And it is a much easier access location than the high school that they're currently using for a lot of those types of things. So those are probably the main highlights. I don't want to take too much of your time. If you guys have any specific questions, I or one of the chiefs can address those for you.
Okay, thank you. What's the total cost of the project?
The total cost of the building is looking at about a little over $6 million. We also will have to put in a road project in order to complete it, so we will be spending closer to $8 million. By the time we get all of everything done, the utilities are to the site that we have picked for this. So we're right now we're requesting 35-37% of the total project cost.
Okay. Other questions? And are you ready? Oh, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question: is there any Homeland Security monies? Maybe you mentioned that and I didn't hear that.
But we do have a lot of equipment that we've received through Homeland Security, and some of that is being stored in rental facilities or outdoors being locked up. We have gotten quite a bit of relocation money through Homeland Security. I don't know if there's any available for building. Jim might have a...
Madam Chair, Senator, we do, as you spoke, we are the relocation center for the Monticello Nuclear Plant, and through them, we do get funding from the decontamination site. They have told us that they will participate somewhat in the building as we are looking at designing one of the bays with drain facilities for decontamination and things like that. So we have been told that they will possibly participate somewhat in the cost of the building, but we haven't been given a definite figure from them.
Thank you.
And how close are you to putting a shovel in the ground?
Our site is ready, the utilities are in, and our programming in terms of the offices that we'd like to do is all done. Final design is highly dependent on dollar figure, though. So while we certainly can afford to do our own police and fire station, if that's all we can afford to do, any of those other expansions and whatever are dependent on state funding.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you all for coming.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Senator Lynch, are you here? I saw you a bit ago. Yep.
Seen her here.
Southeast Minnesota Regional Training Center.
Lots of training.
Oh, there's an amendment. Okay. Whenever you're ready to go, just go.
Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity to visit with you this afternoon, members of the committee. Before we begin the discussion on the bill, and there have been a number of proposals today, one of the things that struck me most after the 35W bridge collapse, members of the House, members of the Senate, Democrats and Republicans, several days, within a few days after that situation, and it was an opportunity to brief members of the legislature on the circumstances and the situation. And what I recall most about that conversation is whether or not we were hearing from the mayor or the police chief or the fire chief or EMS personnel, everyone who spoke to us in that conversation recognized and acknowledged the emergency preparedness and the training that their various entities had received leading up to that time and how important they felt that that was and how beneficial it was in order that we could have the response that we did in Minneapolis. And I think that that is important for us to keep in mind as you're hearing these various proposals today. And with that, Madam Chair, I'm here today with Senate File 1958. And I do would like to begin by offering the A1 amendment.
And members, that's in your packets. And it's a delete all amendment. Do we have a quorum? Yep, we do.
So moved.
Right. Any comments on the amendment? If not, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, the and members, the amendment serves the purpose that this project was included in the 2007 bonding bill, and this amendment more clearly reflects the language that was included at that time. With me today, I have some distinguished guests and friends from home, so it's always nice to have members from the community come up. And Madam Chair, with your indulgence, we'll start first with the Olmsted County Sheriff, Sheriff Borker.
Great. Welcome to our committee.
Madam Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to talk to you about our proposal for a regional training facility. I first got involved with this back in 1998. When the firefighters of our region came to us and said, will you partner with us in putting together some kind of facility because we're running out of homes to burn down. All they had was farmhouses to burn down. And as they were running out, they were running into issues when they were offered a farmhouse. They were running into asbestos abatement issues and whether or not the floors were safe. And even if they got one they could burn down, they'd only get a few bites at the apple before it was all burned down, and they didn't get an opportunity to train subsequent new people 6 months later or give people enough repetitions in order for their actions to become instinctive when they were under the stress of fighting a fire in the middle of a farmhouse where you can't see your hands in front of your face and your self-contained breathing apparatus goes awry. It's not a time to be thinking about how to do things. Those actions need to be instinctive, and they weren't getting accessibility that allowed them to develop skills to the level of instinctiveness. So we put together a plan, and we started coming up here looking for some bonding money starting in 2000. And we've been back every year since, and we've never been successful for one reason or another. Even if we've made it all the way to the end, we ended up with a line item veto with Governor Ventura one year, and there's been other things that have come along and knocked us out. And during that period of time, the need has done nothing but grow. So we're back with you this year looking for a complete facility, not just a burn tower. And if you reference this abbreviated PowerPoint, the front page are the three components. And why that's important is we're not talking about building an edifice of classrooms and break rooms and computer labs. We're talking about hands-on facilities located in Rochester, Minnesota, within a one-hour drive so that all of those small town and rural agencies that are populated by volunteers can get there, get their practice, and get home in one day and actually be able to get there multiple times a year to get the repetitions they need. And so a weapons training area that is really nothing more than a big area the size of a football field with a berm around it that allows us the flexibility to do the kinds of training we need to do in this day. A burn building, as you can see the example there, and a driving range. One of the things we do now to train our local EMS folks to drive those one-ton ambulance rigs is to drive around city streets on a quiet Sunday morning because that's the only place to drive them, or a parking lot out at the college when we can clear all the cars out of there for a couple of days, and we can do that for about four weekends a year. And that doesn't allow us to drive at night, which is why you see a picture of a car driving at night. We need to practice when we drive. The other thing I would point out very quickly, the vast majority of people that would be served by this facility are volunteers. Those people that can't travel, those people that are being called out in the middle of the night to risk their lives, they need to have the practice necessary to be able to save themselves so they can save us. On the second page, there's also a map of where the facilities are currently available in the state, and you'll notice there's nothing available in southeast Minnesota. The final two pages are the resolution from the Olmsted County Board that they will provide the local match for this project in total completely from Olmsted County, and a letter from my county board chair last November to the governor asking that this project be included in the governor's proposed bonding budget because it meets all the criteria relative to regional accessibility. My board and myself are committed to making this regionally accessible all the way from the Iowa border to Cannon Falls and from I-35 to the Wisconsin border. Last but not least, two letters of support from the past, and we'll have more in the next couple of days to prove that this is indeed our facility regionally and not just something for Olmsted County and Rochester. The need is absolutely dire. You're seeing that just by the number of proposals that are coming to you this year. This is being felt across the state. It's very difficult for these projects to be competing against one another when every one of them represents opportunities, necessary opportunities, for volunteers who risk their lives to get the practice they need to save their own lives. So with that, I would ask you to listen for just a moment to City Councilperson Greg House, who's also a firefighter from Stuartville, Minnesota, and then next on my left, Brian Staska from the Riverland Community College. He's the Director of Public Safety and Fire Services.
Thank you. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members, my name is Greg House. I am a Stuartville City Council member for the last 8 years. I am also a 30-year member of our volunteer fire department as well as a first responder, and I sit on the board of the Southeastern Minnesota League of Municipalities as well, which supports this facility in southeastern Minnesota. We need a training facility. We can't afford to send people our 2, 3, 4 hours away for training. We don't have that type of budget. The training tower, it's getting harder and harder to burn homes in the rural area with asbestos, safety-wise, and getting members through. We just put on 5 new members in the last 6 months, trying to bring them up to speed. As far as training, it takes quite a bit of time with SCBA, breathing apparatus, driving with the big fire engines, as well as ambulance services. This is the reason why this would be a great area to serve southeastern Minnesota. It would be a great complex. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Brian Stask. I'm the training coordinator at Riverland Community College, and just wanted to say a couple things about our region down there in southeast Minnesota. We just did a rough count of the firefighters that we have in southeast Minnesota, and it's over 2,000 firefighters in that area, just in that 11 county, like Sheriff said, that 1 hour distance of Rochester. Our area is kind of unique because we run the largest outstate training area besides the degree programs when it comes to fire training, and that's basically all I can speak on is the fire training side of it. So what that's saying is that last year alone we had 33,000 contact hours with firefighters helping them meet their training needs. A facility like this would only increase those hours and give them better training than they ever imagined before. So it just shows that the firefighters in our area enjoy training. They want to train. They're hungry for training. And it would truly be a benefit if a facility like this, a regional facility like this, were put in Rochester. We do a lot of other stuff in Rochester, and our events are just huge when we bring them to Rochester because everybody can make it from that region. So it's a great spot for a training facility. I know it would get utilized a lot, and we just hope that you include it in the bill and it goes forward.
Thank you very much. Questions? I have a really dumb question. How does a burn tower actually work?
If you would, please. Inside these buildings, they have special panels that resist the heat and keep the building itself from burning. And nowadays, the towers have gotten a little safer. I should say a lot safer. They don't use a lot of Class A combustibles. Your wood and paper might be used. A lot of them are going to LP powered, so they're environmentally friendly can be used over and over and over again. Replacing an occasional panel here and there. So they resist the heat well, and they do a good job in training. They don't just use them for fire training either, I should say. They're actual buildings that can have some height to them, so you can use them for rappelling, for search and rescue, for confined space rescue, burn training. It just has a multitude of training opportunities. Even law enforcement could use it for the SWAT tactics and so forth. So they're very multifaceted buildings.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually was in one of the burn towers up here in St. Paul, so that could be possibly a field trip if you'd like.
I think I'm actually going to go see one on Friday.
But my question, Madam Chair, is to the sheriff. Do you get requests from outside the 11 county area, specifically going more west for this type of training? Are the services being... are there enough services for our volunteer firefighters out there in greater Minnesota? And are they requesting to come over to your area? Because obviously you have a kind of a unique training facility or proposal, too.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, it's a two-part answer. No, there's not sufficient facilities, even in central South Minnesota, but will we be accessible and available to folks all the way to Mankato and beyond if they want it and we can schedule? Absolutely. We're committed to making this. I want to see it busy every day that we can put people in it.
So, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Sheriff, is there a fee for that, just out of curiosity?
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, my proposal with the Olmsted County Commissioners at this point is, since they will support the entire local share, those fire departments and EMS units that serve some portion of Olmsted County would be able to use the facility without a fee, except for what they burn up, obviously, and that there will be some user fee to help with maintenance and what have you for groups from outside. But I can absolutely guarantee you it's going to be nominal and it's going to be accessible. Otherwise, there's no point in doing this.
So, in fact, it's considered this southeast Minnesota, but it actually could cover the whole lower tier, mm-hmm. even over to where you live, which is
hour and 45 minutes.
Madam Chair, if I may, that's how we intend it.
Okay.
It's the moniker is what's been with it since we began 8 years ago, or 10 years ago, actually, but that's how we intend it. And, oh, by the way, Madam Chair, bless you.
Thank you.
A little late, but I couldn't work it in earlier.
It's no fun to wake up the morning the session starts with a head cold. So. Maybe you should call it the Just North of Iowa Training Center. Senator Foley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Lynch, the governor has placed this in his bonding bill?
Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, Senator Foley, thank you for the question. I was going to mention that my co-author on this bill is my good friend and colleague, our colleague, Senator Senjum, and we are pleased that the governor has included this project in his bonding bill.
Thank you.
Senator
Rosen,
sorry. Yeah,
that's okay, Madam Chair.
Again.
This is just a curiosity question, but what is the state of volunteer firefighters right now? Is it hard to maintain the level of activity? Do you have to go out and recruit?
I think on the volunteer level, it's constant recruitment. We train ourselves as far as brand new individuals. Just my area now, the southeast corner of the state, probably anywhere from, I would say, 150 to maybe 200 firefighters a year, brand spanking new. And I know that, Stuartville just put on five. We get calls all the time saying that they've got new people. So even the full-time department like Rochester, with the attrition and stuff there, they brought on five just this last year themselves. So it's always a changeover. So.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you all for traveling up here.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, thank you for your time.
Sure. Senator Roebling. I see her sitting back there, but there she was. This is the Scott County Training Facility. You can tell we kind of have a theme for the day.
Hello, Madam Chair.
Thanks for coming by.
Well, thank you for letting us have this bill heard.
Will you pull the microphone closer to you? I'm so stuffed up I can barely...
This is a project that came forward 2 years ago and was given some initial money, bonding money from the state. We received $1 million in 2006. And the project is quite a regional endeavor. In fact, when Scott County, which is the lead agency for this project, came to me and asked if I would consider helping them seek some state bonding dollars, I told them, well, is it a county project or is it a regional project? And they said, if you want it to be a regional project, we will go out and get partners and make it a regional project. And I said, when that happens, I'll carry the bill. And I'm here carrying the bill because they did a wonderful job getting partners and making this into a regional project. And what has been happening out there has been quite amazing so far. It's a $12 million project. We're asking for $4 million from the state. We did receive $1 million last time. So this bill is for $3.2 million. It is a phased project, so things have already started to happen. And the Capital Investments Committee was out there this fall and was able to see all of the activity that has been taking place in some of the construction. The first priority was a shooting range, but it's not your typical shooting range, and I probably will have Carver County Sheriff Bud Olson address that because he knows what their people need for training, and it's very unique and very high-tech, and it'll be an asset for everyone all over the state who might want to come and use this facility. And, it's very comprehensive because we're trying to include everything from the fire tower to the shooting range to public utilities training for emergencies, like if someone's down in a sewer hole and something happens, other people need to be trained how to get them out of there. There is a rail line that runs right along the facility, and they want to also train people on train derailments What do you do if there's a train derailment? It's a very unique facility. We're reusing, recycling something that's on the National Historic Registry. One time it was called Mudbaden. There's sulfur springs down by the river bottoms by Jordan. And they used to treat people for arthritis. And this was kind of a posh healthcare facility in its early days when it was first built. It later became a seminary. It became a jail annex where they held low-security prisoners. And now it is evolving into this training facility, which is very unique. And I want to give my testifiers an opportunity to tell you more about it quickly. I have with me Mayor Jack Haugen from Prior Lake, Carver County Sheriff Bud Olson, Rob Bow, who was with the Scott County Sheriff's Office and is retired from that and now working as a consultant on the project, and Joel McCall, who's at the Savage Fire Department. And I think we're starting with Mayor Haugen.
Great, thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. It was back in 2004 that SCALE, which is the Scott County Association for Leadership and Efficiency, which is made up of every city in Scott County along with the county, 11 townships, 5 school districts, and the Shakopee, Milwaukee, and Sioux community, they responded to a need to address the regional public safety community for training facilities and funded a study at that time to identify the various needs for the entire region. Out of that feasibility study supported the fact that a regional public safety training facility could serve the needs and fill in gaps that occurred throughout the broader region. The needs and gaps identified in the study closely matched the needs that had been presented in the 1999-2000 Minnesota Department of Public Safety statewide master plan, report number 2, and it also demonstrated a need for additional opportunities and facilities for emergency management, public works, and public health and public officials within that area. Through the analysis, as the Senator just mentioned, an historic building that was already owned by the county was identified, and it met the needs, provided existing buildings that could provide for excellent classroom and conference room training, could also provide food service, laundry, and lodging for trainees. In addition, the facility was located in a rural area away from people, if you will, but it was on a major highway, 169, south of southwest of the Twin Cities, making it easily accessible to public safety personnel within Scott County and throughout the region. 2 years ago in 2006, representing SCALE and numerous regional safety agencies, Scott County proposed a $9.9 million project with a state contribution of $4.2 million, which is 42% of the project. We had support, and we have broader support now than 2006, but support both verbally and letters of support from public safety agencies from Mankato to St. Paul, Hennepin, Dakota, Le Sueur, Ramsey, and Nicollet counties, as well as South Central Technical Colleges with campuses in Rice and Blue Earth counties. To that end, 2 years ago in 2006, we were granted $1 million by the state. So at that point in time, we moved forward aggressively with the end in mind. The project was modified so it could be completed in two phases. A joint powers agreement and memorandum of understanding was created that and developed and approved by Scott County, the 7 cities within Scott County, and the Shakopee, Milwaukee, and Sioux community. Those agreements created a governing board that I'm pleased to chair. Scott County committed its property and existing buildings valued at $1.5 million to the project. Also, an additional $5 million in capital dollars to match the state's $1 million were committed so the facility could move forward aggressively. We expended $150,000 for the construction of fiber into the facility, expend an additional $160,000 for other renovations, elevator improvements, et cetera. And perhaps a very significant item is we've hired, established an operating budget because this will be, there'll be no dependence on the state from an operational standpoint, and we've hired a full-time facility manager who coincidentally will start this Friday, the 15th. The match of local money to state money is $6.8 million to the state's $1.0 million at this time. In other words, 87% from the local jurisdictions. If the current bonding request of $3.2 million is approved, then the match ratio from the local entities to the state will be 62% local, 38% state. So you can see there's a very, very significant local investment in making this project a reality. At this point, I'd ask Rob Bull, our retired deputy sheriff, to perhaps create a picture of the infrastructure as it's been created to this point and what phase two will look like. Rob?
When we began phase one, we knew it was critical that everything we did prepare the site for phase two. So all of our site work, our drainage, our road access, our utility relocations was all done in anticipation of phase two. We put water into the site. The hydrant system was put into the site, again, planning for future fire props. You'll see the burn tower in just a minute. We actually have a photo of the site here. It was actually taken by one of our construction workers who was a private pilot, and just before the snow flew, he's so proud of it, he flew over and took a picture. It was nice enough to give it to us. But behind us, you can see the pond and then a large open area where we, in the future, we have planned to locate our hazardous materials props, our flammable liquid props, our propane props. Again, going to what you heard before, using propane-fired gas props so that we have complete control over the fire and reduce any chance of injury for our firefighters. Phase two would be to the build-out between the concrete building and the pond. We've constructed two police ranges. Those will be commissioned within 2 weeks. When we met with our public safety providers from throughout our region of about five counties, we had them come to our center and tell us their needs. And we heard overwhelmingly a need for a rifle range. So our site does include a 200-yard rifle range. Like it or not, the patrol rifle has become a part of squad cars for many communities, and the need for the officers to qualify both at the shorter distances and then particularly learn how to do the longer shot is a reality for law enforcement. We've had an advanced, they're called FATS machines, firearms training simulators. I see the former sheriff nodding. That is also installed and became operational today. It's a highly technical prop, but it really allows the officers to go through use of force decision making, not only accuracy. Quite often when an officer is involved in a use of force situation, we really focus on the decision making process that went into it. We constructed a 5-story concrete tactical building, sometimes called the fire burn tower. We plumbed that building and built it to have 4 burners. Our phase one funding only allowed to have 2. Our phase two funding is to have that built out as well and have the full 4 burners put in. That building is constructed for crossover training with law enforcement. There's different internal stairways, external stairways. We have the ability to put smoke into it as well as to have a changeable maze system that the building has. We're looking to finish that with the additional burners. We've remodeled the old existing Mud Bot and Health Spa into a series of classrooms that can be used, including we call it a dirty classroom where our responders can come in with wet boots and wet shoes and get a briefing and go right back out again and conduct their training. We have a high-tech classroom that's coming in, so which will offer a video conferencing as well.
Okay, thank you. And next we have... Sure. Sheriff Olson, right?
Madam Chair and members, thank you for giving us the opportunity. You know, the first thing I need to say is we need your support for this. They were well along the road and path of building this before I saw the full details of this. But over time, I've looked at this and looked at other projects, and they're all wonderful projects, as my sheriff, where is he? Everyone has a dire need for a project like this. But what sold me on this project here is the land use, the recycling of what was already there, an existing property. But when they came over and sat down with me, Madam Chair and members, you know what? They went to every township person that this would impact. They did a whole bunch of studies around as far as the impact it would have to local residents and to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife where this site is sited. I struggle in Carver County because I have to take my 80-plus deputies to a sand pit today and shoot, and that sand pit's going to have trucks hauling out of it next year. So I am in a dire place of having to find a facility where I can take a very large sheriff's office and public safety and fire over and use a facility like this. So as I moved in and saw what they've all done in this project, they're ready to go. You know, you want to talk about boots on the street. This is ready for us to get using it in our law enforcement community, our fire community. So the money that's already been invested has been a wise investment up to this point. The money is certainly helping us get to what we see our vision is, a regional, multi-jurisdictional program. And my last comment I want to make is one thing that people tend to forget and is when the I-35 bridge went down, my dive team was over with Hennepin County with the sheriff there. And when we work in proximity to other sheriffs and other chiefs of police and other fire services, it's really that relational issue that we build when we build a facility like this. People from all over that region and all over the state can come down and interact with us. I've been as far as up north on the Katy Poirier story. I had detectives there. So when we look at how we deploy our resources as a governmental unit, we look at how we help and share with others. And that's what this project has, is all that multi-jurisdictional sharing going on. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to summary if I could. In summary, if I could, please, I think you've heard from Rob and Sheriff Olson the relationship between other entities. And we've had in excess of 25 jurisdictions, both fire and police, that have indicated an interest of being actively involved in this project as users. And I guess our plea at this point is we started this journey 4 years ago with a thought. And 2 years ago, we gained $1 million of financial support from the state, and we appreciate that. And a year ago, we were on the bonding bill that didn't quite make it through to final resolution. So I think our plea is let's finish the job that we started in the past. This project, when built out, quite candidly, will be the only regional facility in use or being proposed in the state of Minnesota that's able to fully meet the requirements of Tier 2 regional public safety and training facility, so that all multi-discipline training and exercise components will be part of it. And due to its location, will be easily accessible to more public safety providers than any other regional facility being proposed. With the exception of Camp Ripley, we will have the capability and capacity to provide more training opportunities, more diverse opportunities, to public safety providers, again, than any other facility in use or being proposed in the state of Minnesota today. And also we will have provided to the state the largest match of local dollars to fund this, as I mentioned earlier. We're asking that the state approve the $3.2 million bonding request and, as I said a moment ago, finish what we started several years ago. And I certainly thank you for your time today. Senator?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. There is a statewide component to this as the project continues to be developed. Those hospital rooms or healthcare rooms that became jail rooms later on are planned to be remodeled into kind of hotel-type rooms if we can continue with the project, where teams could come in from other parts of the state and actually stay overnight. The kitchen is there, the laundry is there, as I mentioned, that you could have all sorts of training from people throughout the state of Minnesota coming in smaller groups or larger groups. They have the conference rooms, they have the training facilities. They're developing a fee structure so that they would know how to charge the different entities for coming in, trying to keep it as affordable and reasonable as possible so that we can keep the place busy, because that certainly is a goal. We want to develop this and we want to use it, as we heard from the Olmsted County proposal as well. And so trying to bring in as many partners as we can and trying to bring in as many users as possible will absolutely be our goal. So we thank you for your consideration, and we'll be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Senator Robler. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm not sure, I don't think Senator Roebling can answer this. Perhaps she can. What are the different tiers, and what exactly is a Tier 2 training facility? What's the criteria for each tier? Several tiers thrown out here, and I'm not quite sure. A little confused. Anybody can answer that?
Can anybody answer that?
you want to? Rob, I think that's a technical question that I defer to your expertise.
The state has put forth an idea that we agree with, that training could be looked at in terms of three tiers, with the lowest level tier being the training that occurs at the local station or maybe at a neighboring station, whether it be a police, fire, or EMS, the real core skill building. Tier two moves to the regional centers, things that you can't do there that you can do on a larger scale. And then tier three is a real large-scale exercise component that I believe is coming up next, as they're going to propose this for Camp Ripley. And really the skills that are needed at that tier three are built in the tier one and tier two training.
Senator Wilson.
But Madam Chair, I believe I heard from the mayor that this facility is the only true tier two training facility. Is that the same as the Southeastern Minnesota tier two training facility? Did I understand that correctly?
I would make the assumption that it would be, but is...
Sheriff is still on the call.
Is the sheriff still here? Oh, come on back, Sheriff. Is the Southeast Minnesota training facility considered, would that be considered a Tier 2?
Madam Chair, to my understanding, yes.
Okay.
Right. Then I apologize for my misstatement there. I was told this was the only true Tier 2, so thank you.
Things evolve around
That's
here.
That's correct.
Hey, any other questions? Senator Latz.
Yeah, thank you. I was looking at this scale brochure. The Scott County Association for Leadership and Efficiency. Looks like a pretty broad-based collective effort to pull together the communities on a common platform to promote safety and other issues of concern to the Scott County area. I was noting with interest that in the middle panel on the inside that the top legislative initiative that they support for a long-term statewide strategy for infrastructure planning and funding is to pass successfully the comprehensive transportation bill that the legislature passed last year and was vetoed by the governor. This is the same group that is also on the left panel on the inside is promoting the particular facility that you're here on today. And I would only suggest that we'll have more room in the bonding bill for non-transportation related projects if the comprehensive transportation bill is passed to provide the funding for some of the projects that might otherwise have to be covered in the regular bonding bill. I appreciate the distribution of this brochure. It's helpful to help put some of these things in perspective. I also had a question because as I'm looking through some of the materials that are coming up, the Minnesota Department of Public Safety has at some point, it looks like about 10 years ago, gone through kind of a comprehensive statewide analysis of where the gaps are in training facilities. I wonder, I'm searching for some sort of overall plan or logic. I understand each region that's presenting here today is, you know, has pulled together their regional efforts and believes they have a need that's not being met right now. But what I'm not clear on is if there is kind of a statewide vision of whether these facilities are needed, whether they might be better sited in a different location, whether we're going to end up approving some that are going to overlap each other but leave other areas uncovered or the needs unmet in other areas. And I don't know if there's someone in the room now or later in the hearing that would be able to give us some guidance on that question. But I'd look for some overall statewide coordination on siting these facilities rather than just picking up here and there the regions that have organized and come before us today or in the next couple of weeks.
One of the people who is slated to speak on the Camp Ripley proposal is Assistant Commissioner Tim Leslie. And we had conversations with him, and that's where these two reports have come from. And members, if I would be so bold as to ask you that sometime before we make our decisions, if you'll take a look at these two reports, and they will help us with some of those questions that Senator Latz just referenced. And I have the same question as how many do we need?
where do we need them? You know, how far is this fire tower from the next fire tower that you would have to go to if you didn't have this one? Where is a point at which we meet the need that the state requires? And we need to work through all of those questions at some point. But Assistant Commissioner Leslie will be here, and I think we can throw some toward him at some point. Any other questions? So how close is the closest fire tower to you folks out there?
Edina, I believe.
Edina? Okay. And that's 15 miles, 20 miles?
It's probably a half hour.
Okay.
I think to answer your question there, and perhaps this is a little editorial on my part, but I think if you go 2 hours out from this site, it probably represents, it's all the way up to Little Falls. Within 2 hours, you get nearly to our western border, certainly to our southern border, almost encompasses the whole southeastern part of our state. So there is some duplication there. So I think there's a, if you use a two-hour barometer or a measurement, I think there's a vast majority of Minnesota that would fit within 2 hours. And I think in any tower, any burn situation or training situation, there will be some duplication on edges. It would be senseless to have them side by side. But I think many of the things that that Rob pointed out and the sheriff pointed out, there are details of this particular site that make it very unique in its training applications on a broader scope, not just a burn tower, not just A, B, or C, but the broader nature, including the classroom facilities, the lodging facilities, et cetera.
Senator Foley?
Yeah, Madam Chair, you do have the southeastern thing that on that. The second page shows the burn towers, shoot houses, and driving range.
Okay.
And so there is a concern about the overlap. I happen to be on the committee, and so we're looking at that to make sure that we don't have more duplication than we already have. There's some concentration now with Fridley and Minneapolis, St. Paul and Bloomington all having burn towers.
The Minneapolis burn tower is in Fridley. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This seems like a wonderful proposal. And you're very organized, and you're on the road. I mean, you're almost there. It would be a shame not to fund this, because I do think it's a great proposal. My question is, being on the edge of the metro as you are, or maybe you are in the metro, and serving the greater Minnesota and the metro needs, is there a difference? Is there anything different that you have to do as far as needs that need to be met in the training? This is just a curious question.
Rob?
Mr. Bowe?
One of the components that we did add to it is fire departments that are in cities have pressurized hydrants. Fire departments that are in rural areas have to truck their water in and use bulk tanks and have to be able to pull that water, draft that water up. So because we do have 1 foot in the city world and 1 foot in the rural world, the water system that we've put in allows us to do both. From the law enforcement side, we probably saw rifles in some of the county or more rural areas coming in ahead of the urban areas.
Okay. Thank you. Do you have volunteer firefighters there, or you have professionals? Wrong choice of words, I apologize.
I believe that's called paid on call.
Okay. Right.
Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah. They are all professional.
Yeah, they are all professional. You're right.
But with the exception of the tribal fire department, they are volunteers.
With the exception of the who?
The Midwakanton Tribal Fire Department.
The tribal
is full-time.
Fire. Okay, gotcha. All right. And again, I apologize to everybody. Any other questions? Thank you all very much for coming to see us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Coring, are you still here? You are.
Right here.
right here. Tim, just give me one of these. That's a bad call.
No, I'm fine. And a new head.
You really take this training seriously.
Yeah.
Because they're volunteers.
So yeah, really, that's right.
Talk to the people.
We think more and more now. Yeah.
That's the problem.
Madam Chair, are you ready? Can you hear me?
Pull it right up close,
Senator. Yep, Madam Chair. Well, first I want to start out by saying, well, obviously I have Senate file 2487 here. You know, I've actually been here for the whole meeting, and I will say that, you know, I'm on the bonding committee, and I've been to almost all of these proposals that have been brought forward, and obviously they're all worthy. And I understand, and I commend the sheriff's departments and the fire departments and the police departments for wanting to have their men and women trained to the farthest extent that they can. But this proposal that I have or that we're putting forward, it's $5 million for pre-design and a construction phase one of a Tier 3. And obviously we've discussed what the tiers are. Tier 3 for a Homeland Security and Emergency Management Training an exercise center at Camp Ripley, which includes a classroom facility and several facilities for field response training. Now, and again, not taking anything away from the other proposals that are here, but the large difference in the proposal that I have is the proposal is at Camp Ripley, which is a state-owned facility. It's owned by the state of Minnesota. Obviously, because I have the assistant commissioner here, the Department of Public Safety thinks this is a very important proposal. Camp Ripley, General Kelly is here, thinks this is a very important proposal. And in talking to Senator Langseth, and I'm not speaking for him, but what he told me is he said, no local projects. And I told him, I said, well, I don't really have any local projects. I have a lot of regional projects. And, you know, we throw around the regional thing to try to get into the bonding bill. But this is truly, it's not a regional project. It's not a local project. This is a statewide project. This is at Camp Ripley, the 57,000-acre facility that is owned by the taxpayers of Minnesota. And so I'm going to cease at this time, and I guess, do you want to go first? Okay. I'll have the Assistant Commissioner, Madam Chair, go first, and then General Kelly, and then we would stand for any questions that the committee might have. And I would really appreciate the committee hearing this important proposal today.
Thank you, Senator.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Tim Leslie, Assistant Commissioner, and Chris Idy, unfortunately, could not be with me today. She's out of town, but I'm going to walk you through this. I'm kind of bound by PowerPoint a little bit, so I apologize. I'm going to kind of go fast. I know I don't have a whole lot of time. The Camp Ripley proposal is part of the governor's bonding request. It's $5 million to build a Phase 1 full-scale disaster management training center at Camp Ripley. The request also includes $3.65 million for a regional training center in Olmsted County, and then $500,000 for pre-design of a state emergency operations center. If all the money is not used for that pre-design, then the remainder of that would be used to update the pre-design for a co-located headquarters facility for the Department of Corrections and the Department of Public Safety. So I wanted to make sure you understood that. Joining me at the table today is, of course, General Joe Kelly, Senator Coring, of course, Yuli Seal, the fire chief of the city of Bloomington, former assistant chief for the city of Minneapolis, Christy Rollwagon, emergency preparedness director, deputy director of city of Minneapolis, and as needed, Don Beckering, one of the few people left from the 1999 study that is referenced in your packet. In your packets, you'll see letters of support for this proposal from the Chiefs of Police Association, Sheriff's Association, Minnesota Fire Chiefs Association, Minnesota Fire Departments Association, Association of Minnesota Emergency Managers, and the Ambulance Association as well. So I'm going to run through this real quick here. This is our public safety mission, and this fits perfectly with that. When we talk about public safety, of course, we have our tagline, which is making Minnesota safer, and this project does that as well. Homeland Security, this is their strategic goals for the coming year. They just created this about 5 months ago. And as Chris Eide told me, what she says to herself is, will the Camp Ripley project effectively prepare us for disaster? Yes. Will the Camp Ripley project effectively enhance recovery of a community through training to local agencies? The answer is yes to both of those. These are recent disasters. We had a heck of a year. We've had a heck of a few years, frankly. As you can see, we have disasters. And our desire through this project is to make every part of this state have the same level of preparedness as the next. Kind of lofty, but that's okay. We're going to have to hit it. Ohio recently passed as having the most presidential disaster declarations. Other than that, we have been number one in the upper Midwest. Okay, I have a few pictures here. I'm just going to run through them real quick. This is kind of the 2007 in a snapshot. The bridge collapse, albeit a disaster, was also seen by many as a success in an operation involving multi-jurisdictional and multidisciplinary preparedness and response. So we all keep that in mind. Of course, you also had the floods in Rushford. We also had the floods in Browns Valley. BWCA fire, you remember that? Tornado. Is there anything more indiscriminate than a tornado? Explosions, maybe. Tanker rollover recently in Minneapolis, I know Senator Higgins' area. Ultimately, it comes down to multi-jurisdictional, multidisciplinary response, and that's what it's really all about. That's what we're going to talk about here today, and that's what this training center is really all about. The public expects us to do this well, and we must meet their expectations, frankly. The history. Now, this is the hard part, is I'm going back to 1999, and that's where it kind of gets, things have changed a lot since then. And, of course, you all know what, 9/11, Katrina, those kind of things. Ultimately, one of the big recommendations from the 99 study that you have in your packet is that consideration for funding should be given to facilities with collaborative ownership or operation among federal, state, and local agencies to maximize cost efficiencies. And this proposal you hear about today does exactly that. After the 99 report, the legislature asked that the work group get back together and then make recommendations about siting, financing, and the use of training facilities. And those are also in your report as well. What has happened since the report is the legislature has funded 5 sites. And those are your 5 sites. I'm sorry if you can't see exactly those, but I'll go through them briefly. In the year 2000, the Minnesota Emergency Response and Industry Training Center, the Merit Center in Marshall, was funded for $1.3 million. That is a Tier 2 or regional training center primarily focused on fire, rescue, and industry training related to the industry in that part of the state. And that's actually not a very good... Marshall's actually a little bit further west. In the year 2000, the city of Hutchinson was funded about $240,000, and that is a countywide and citywide operations center, emergency operations center that they use there. And I've actually talked to the chief there, the police chief. 2003, the city of Edina was funded for $500,000. They have a Tier 2 regional training center. It's a consortium of cities, Edina, Eden Prairie, the airports, and Bloomington that share the operational cost of that facility and also rent it out. They have a burn tower, a defensive tactics area, and a target range. 2004, Ramsey County was funded for $500,000. If you go to Ramsey County Sheriff's Office, you have a brand new facility there. They have a regional target range. That's what was funded there. And a small training center for defensive tactics and things like that. 2006, you just heard Scott County was funded for $1 million for design as a regional training center. And then also from the study that report number 2, Northeast, Northwest, Central, Southwest, Southeast, and then 3 in the Metro. Those are the regions that were recommended to be funded. Since 99, well, we've had a lot of things happen since 99. One of the biggest things you'd find that if you read the 1999 study and then you fast forward to 2008 is that instead of talking about just fire, law enforcement, and EMS, we now talk about 10 disciplines as it relates to public safety and preparation. And those it's government administration, police, fire, hazmat, emergency medical services, public works, public health, transportation, public safety communications, again, so critical during the bridge collapse, the ability of us to talk to each other, huge issue, and then health delivery systems. Just like the fact that I still use a computer, I don't use the same one since 99. I have a new technology. The study is similar. So the foundation that was built on that study was excellent. There's a lot of findings that were correct, a lot of information that's very usable. However, things have just changed a lot. The expectations from the public is entirely different now. They don't want to hear about our issues with silos. They don't want to hear about us talking about inability to share information or not talk to each other. They expect us to be able to do that. So what we did in 2006, after session, we got together and started talking about this. What are the priorities? What are the field saying to us that they need in terms of training? So this is part of the stakeholder group we got together. We got the chiefs of police, the fire chiefs, the sheriffs, emergency managers, and the ambulance association. We got our stakeholders from the state agencies together, National Guard, State Patrol, Homeland Security, MNSCU, and BCA. And we got together and began to talk about this. And we met and met, and this is where we came up. We actually dusted off a military model. And it's basically echelon training that the military uses. And we called it the Tier 1, 2, and 3 concept. Tier 1 basically is local. That's when you get together with your local police officers or your local firefighters. You talk about policy and procedure. You do things you can do locally. Tier 2 was best stated by Rob Bowe. He was just here from Scott County. He told you what Regional 2 is. Those were regions get together and do the things they need to do together to address a public safety issue that they're facing, if it's a disaster or whatever. But Tier 3, we had not previously talked about. That was a full-scale, specialized training in one centralized location, and that's really what this proposal is about today. Like I said before, after Katrina, after 9/11, huge issues, huge mandates from the federal government, NIMS, the National Presidential Directives, the fact that we're supposed to know each other and know what we're doing and be able to communicate with each other. Just briefly, regarding regional response, and that's kind of related to the Tier 2 concept, I have the Southeast sitting there as an example. What this center at Camp Ripley could do is you could bring every emergency manager from one part of the state together, and you could do a simulated flood and talk about the issues that would be facing each county. They would have to talk and say, for example, what do you have that we could use in Wabasha County? In Winona County, what could be used that's maybe in Olmsted? And they could share and talk. And when I turned to Chris Idy when I was proposing this kind of a slide or an idea, I said, "That doesn't currently happen, Chris?" Question mark. And she said, "No, that currently does not happen." So you can imagine the kind of gaps that are existing across this state when we're talking about regional response, when we're talking about forest fires, tornadoes, floods, things that we know are going to happen, not to mention the things that we don't know might happen, and our preparedness towards those. Our stakeholder priorities, we eventually had to cut to the chase and say, "All right, folks, what are we going to do here?" And they unanimously picked a Tier 3 site at Camp Ripley as being the site of choice. Obviously, there's needs. Olmsted obviously has huge needs. You can just look down at that southeast region and talk about the cities down there and all the firefighters that need the training and the police officers. It's obvious. But this also emerges as a high priority. And the commissioner always loves to say emergency is the wrong time to exchange business cards. So I had to throw that one in there. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Yuli Seal briefly, and he could talk about, the Mount Weather training that the city of Minneapolis participated in that's really the model for what we're doing here.
Chief Seal, welcome.
Madam Commissioner, thank you. I had the opportunity, along with about 60 city and county officials, to attend a training out on the East Coast at Mount Weather, which is actually in Virginia, but it's close to Maryland, to attend an integrated emergency management training course. And over a 4 or 5 day period, they did exactly what Assistant Commissioner Leslie was alluding to, and trained for a major disaster were it to hit the community. That training was not only very well received by the attendees, but obviously put to use when the bridge went down. I think the operations in their emergency operations center over the 18-day period during the response and recovery efforts and their ability to manage that situation was a direct reflection on the training. It was very difficult to organize and convince the top command staff and policy-making staff from the city of Minneapolis to go all the way out to the East Coast and separate themselves from their normal day-to-day responsibilities and jobs to get that training in. If that training had been going on during 9/11, obviously, with all the flights that shut down, it would have been extremely difficult to get back and manage issues in their own cities. A Tier 3 training site in the state, we'd be able to do that training in the state, still get our elected officials and our command staff far enough away from their desks to actually engage them in the training, but not so far enough away that if something bad happened, they couldn't get back in a timely manner.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, then we would have General Kelly would go next. We'll try to keep it brief for the committee.
Okay, General Kelly, welcome.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senator. I guess I just want to put this project that Commissioner Leslie is talking about in context, because as people have said several times today, describing Camp Ripley as a training center and as a statewide resource, once again, Camp Ripley is providing, I think, a tremendous opportunity to the emergency management, emergency response, and law enforcement communities in Minnesota. And the reason is because the Army, the federal government, the Army has decided to build a mock city, if you will, a little town of 24 buildings with a road network, an underground tunnel system, utilities, and so forth at Camp Ripley for the purpose of training our soldiers of how to train and operate and conduct combat operations in built-up areas, in urban areas. And the investment on the federal government side is approximately $19 million to come in and build this fully automated, fully instrumented with video recordings and after-action capabilities for the Army. Put that on the ground, which represents for Minnesota an opportunity for an additional marginal investment to use those very same facilities in that little town, if you will, to train law enforcement, to train emergency medical service professionals, firefighters, emergency managers, and so forth. So this really, once again, represents a tremendous opportunity to leverage what's already at Camp Ripley and what the federal government is investing in for one type of response, a military response, to make sure that Minnesota, on the civil side, law enforcement, emergency, medical, and fire, is prepared for something else. So this is an opportunity to get a $19 million head start to build the kind of facility that's envisioned here by public safety.
General Kelly, would there be, I assume there are overnight facilities for the teams of folks to come and stay overnight and do more than a single day training?
Yes, ma'am. We have, and I don't have the exact numbers for you, but I can get those for the committee. We have the ability to house several hundred people in what we call maid service quarters, provide a dining facility, and so forth. It's to soldier standard, so it's a little Spartan, but there are facilities there. And with the facilities that are there, with the shoot house and some of the other ranges, and the Department of Transportation runs a snowplow driver's training course, the DNR and State Patrol have academies up there. We are providing that kind of support for billeting and dining facilities pretty much every day of the year at Camp Ripley. So, yes, ma'am, this would not be a day camp type of an operation. We do have the ability to house people and take care of them overnight.
Senator Rosen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. General Kelly, and perhaps Senator Corrine can answer this. How many jobs would this create, this new site?
Well, I guess we haven't talked about jobs. Any jobs that come up to that area is great. But I think we're kind of more looking at it as a, you know, with 9/11 and terrorism and the preparedness that we need to have, I think that's kind of what we're more looking at. I would assume that that would produce a lot of construction jobs. But after the facility is up and running, I don't anticipate a whole lot of jobs. I believe there is going to be this wasn't brought up, but the commissioner, assistant commissioner, can talk about this. There is going to be a request in the public safety budget ongoing for about, I guess, $200,000 or $300,000 or for this facility. So it's very minimal. But I would just say, reiterate to the committee again, this is a state asset. Camp Ripley is owned by the state of Minnesota, and so what you're doing, if you choose to accept this proposal, you're spending state tax dollars on a state facility. So I would stand for any further questions.
Senator Berger,
need to wrap up anything?
Madam Chair, I think it makes a lot of sense to use state land when we can, rather than, you know, encouraging everybody to go out and purchase land or to build new facilities. My concern really isn't about Senator Corrine's proposal here, but in general, it seems to me like it would make sense for somebody to figure out how to divide up the state so that we would have the state covered with training facilities for emergency personnel in all the areas they need to be trained, rather than having them come in on a community by community ad hoc basis and having them get funded without a plan. It's a little bit like, you know, before we had all the colleges we have, if everybody was just coming in and asking the state to build a college in their town, and whoever got there first got a college. I mean, we need a plan. We need to have these facilities so we can have adequate training done, but we don't need them to be overlapping. We need them to be, if they are regional, then they need to be serving on a regional basis, in my opinion. And I think without a plan of how, you know, if your region has gotten one, then, you know, nobody should come and ask for another one. Otherwise, we'll just have more proposals than you will have time in the future to hear before the bonding committee will have its deadline, because every community in the world will want one.
I think that planning may end up being us. And so take a look at all of the things and keep all of what we've been hearing in mind today. And on next Wednesday, we'll try and make the plan.
Well, I guess then I would request the staff to give us information when we look at the proposals as to how far away it is from the next closest facility that's either proposed or already funded.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
You can do that, Commissioner.
Senator Lantz and Senator Berglund. I have a tool I created that kind of looks at the criteria from the 1999 and the 2000 studies, where you'd be able to go down the checklist and see if it meets. Now, I'll provide that to the committee and to the CA, and if you guys want to use that, have at it. But it'll help kind of distinguish the differences between each proposal you're facing, because you have a daunting task in front of you.
Senator Berger?
I think that would be helpful also.
Yep. That'd be great if you could get that to us.
I'll do that.
Senator Rosen.
And Madam Chair, the criteria for the different tiers also.
Yes.
And okay.
Tiers. Okay. Good.
I'll do that as well.
All right. Any more about the Camp Ripley proposal?
I thank the committee for its patience.
Thank you. Nice to have you before our committee.
It's nice to be back at school for the first couple of days,
yeah,
because everybody's kind of engaged and has a lot of questions.
Yep.
But
yep.
As it goes on, I'm sure we won't have as many.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator.
Looks like we have two proposals left. Senator Ingebretson
and
the Alex folks.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. Thank you so much, Madam Chair, for hearing this today. I've got with me today the Vice President of Alexandria Technical College, John Phillips, who will go through the bonding request. Just so you understand, this is a bonding request through MNSCU. It is obviously law enforcement related. That's why we're here. This particular project has been actually in the makings since 2006, when the Tech College was funded by the state of Minnesota for $400,000, and since that time, they've also added $200,000 of their own money. And as you can see, according to the handout here, and Vice President Phillips will take you through it here a little bit, that they are actually everything is completed and ready to go should the funding be accepted by the legislature. So with that, I'll turn it over to Vice President John Phillips.
Thank you. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Just briefly to describe what that building we're asking for contains, it actually has four components. And as far as the construction of the building, it's a pretty simple building to build because it's kind of, like I said, it's got four boxes to it, and they kind of are separate in their own entity. If we look to the, if you have the copy of the brochure that Senator Engelbertson was talking about, you look to the tactical warehouse, that is a building that is basically like a warehouse. It's empty. We would be able to set up storefronts, and we could put a 70-foot by 14-foot mobile home in there, and we would take the top off it. Now, the reason we're looking at this is in that building there would be a skyway or a catwalk, if you will, that would allow the instructors to walk around on top and view what's going on underneath. The reason for the mobile home is that it presents a scenario, which we do a lot of scenario training, and I'll get to why this building is necessary in a second, but that allows us to put the instructor above and out of the way of the students and the actors and actresses that we have to kind of fulfill this scenario training. The scenario that we're talking about would be a domestic dispute, and we like the use of a mobile home because it's fairly tight, and once you get in there, if things go bad, they go bad real quick, and so we can use this. Our actors and actresses are law enforcement personnel from the region around our area. So that allows us to do this. Now, why do we need a building? We can't do this in the wintertime. We don't do it at night because we disturb our neighbors, and that disturbs the neighbors a little bit, but the firearms even disturbs them even more. So we'll get to the indoor range in a second. The second phase of that building is a physical training area, and that's like a gymnasium except has a lower ceiling. It's not an athletic facility. It's a facility for defensive tactics. It's a facility for learning how to handcuff people, how to disarm somebody, how to protect your own weapon, and any other self-defense that we need. The firearms range allows us to have 10 lanes of pistol range indoors. And where we get a lot of complaints from our neighbors, we have to shoot. We shoot night shooting, especially in the summertime. We can't do that until 10 or 11 o'clock at night, and we have now the area around our campus has grown, and there's residential houses around there and commercial places, and obviously they don't like us shooting outside in our firing range outside at 11 o'clock at night. Keeps them awake, and they have a legitimate concern for that. So, and then the other side of the building is the office complex, which has offices for our faculty, and it has student life area and lockers for the students. And that's the component, that's the building that we're asking for. It's 55,600 square feet, as you can see. We are talking to Pope Douglas Incinerator, which sits about 300 yards to the south of us, as to whether or not we can purchase steam from them to heat and cool this building. And by the way, if we get funded for the building, the warehouse does not have air conditioning in it, and it's only going to be heated to 55 degrees. The rest of it would have air conditioning and heating as usual. The firearms range, we feel we need it because we can't teach firearms in the wintertime, at least not safely. There's an argument that says, well, law enforcement works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 12 months a year. And they do, and we don't disagree with that. But to train people to fire a pistol when it's cold out, they're not concentrating on the pistol. They're concentrating on how to keep their hands warm or their face warm or something else. And it allows us, or it puts us in a position where we can be seriously hurt.
So, we have a question.
Sure.
Senator Foley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What I'm concerned about is what you've just been talking about and having a firing range. Do you have any ability to get your firing range and your stuff at a better location so you won't be bothering the community, if you will? In other words, can you build something over here versus where it currently is that won't bother the community, people?
Vice President Phillips?
Madam Chair, Senator, we're kind of landlocked right now with everything around our campus. We don't have any other place to go. We own 40 acres of land that's just about two blocks away, which isn't going to change the sound of what we're talking about. The firing range that we have is bunkered by large ground bunkers, and it has a roof on it. There's not there's a, I wouldn't say never, but I can't imagine how you can shoot and get out of that range unless you turn around and shoot out the back end of it, which obviously you shouldn't do. The range, I think, is safe from any projectile getting out and hurting anybody. It's the noise that keeps people awake, obviously, and I don't know where we could put that unless we took it off campus and moved it to some place where we'd have to purchase land and do that. Nobody complains during the daytime.
Thank you. I would suggest that you look at ways to develop something more remote than what you currently have. I live in Oak County, and we have a firing range that this county has, and I live about a mile from that, and I can hear that even with the windows closed, so I know what you got there. And it's going to be just a short period of time before those folks are going to come up in arms and you won't be able to keep that range up. There's not a lot of firing ranges in the metropolitan area, and so you want to think about long term, otherwise you're going to have a real thing. One of the things you have to think about is that the police officers have to do shoot training when it's cold because they might pull that gun when they're out chasing somebody and so on. So you can't stop that. I can recall my first year in the state patrol when I was at Camp Ripley and it was 22 below and we were out shooting and they didn't give us any opportunity to do that. So what I'm saying is, you've got a dilemma there, but it's one that's shared by a whole series of police officers in the state, and you should be figuring out what you can do in the long run.
Madam Chair and Senator, you're right. I don't disagree with you. I think our only concern is, and I don't know when you went through the patrol, if you had gone to BCA school or anything else prior to when you went to the patrol school.
About 10 years before that.
Okay. But our we're training pretty young people, and some of them have never seen or handled a handgun. And I agree with you. We do take them out in the cold weather. It's just that we're limited because of the number of students we're trying to get through that program, and we can't get them all into an eight-lane range outside and get them through there in a reasonable length of time. So our days may start for our two-year program at 6 in the morning and may go till 10 at night just to get them through a firing range. And if we had the indoor range, wouldn't mean we would take the outside range away. We'd still use it. And we would use that for right now when we use it, we will take those students and they'll fire their rounds and then they'll run for 100 yards and come back and then try to fire it again when they're a little more winded than just standing like a target shooting practice. So And I agree. I think we have to take a look at that range because I don't know the incinerator is on one side of us, and they're not going to bother us about the noise. I don't think. But the other side, we've got houses, and you're right. Those people now will complain at night. They don't complain. They haven't bothered us yet during the daytime. They understand what we're doing. But what happens when the rest of the area around there builds up as Alexandria is moving south and we're at the south end of town? So once it gets built up, you're right. Where do we go?
How far are you away,
Senator Foley?
How far are you from Camp Ripley?
Madam Chair and Senator, we're about 90 miles or better, about 100 miles. We looked at going to Camp Ripley to try to do the training, and one of the things that we actually looked at going there for the whole training and having all of our skills done up there, but one of the things that kind of deterred us from doing that is that it takes a large number of students away from the campus, and so if we took them up there for the whole 2 years, they don't have much of a campus life, and they're going to college. We are a college, obviously, and they want to be a part of the college life as much as anybody else does. So we have interior design, which is about, it's over at the airport, which is about 2 miles away, and it's not a good deal either because they're away from the campus and they can come back. It's better than 100 miles, but still, it's not on campus. And so that was one of the reasons we didn't look at going to Camp Ripley any more than we did. It's still an option, certainly.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, I guess the question I have is, I thought that proposals that were going to be funding things at technical colleges went through a different division than this one.
Got sent to us because it's called a law enforcement center, I think.
Well, I understand that, but if it's being built as part of a Minsky college and as part of the Minsky system, I thought those all went through together in a different division.
Maybe we can check into that and see if we need to refer this over to higher ed. I have a question for Senator Foley. Is the shooting range that you talked about in your community outside or in a building?
Oh, it's all outside.
It's all outside. And this one would be inside a building, right? Or did I not
Madam
understand
Chair, no,
that
No, that's correct. The request, that's inside. Yes.
Because I've been in the same building that the shooting range is in Robbinsdale. That used to be called Bill's Gun or whatever, something like that. And even though I was in this, the upper part of the building, and that's kind of in the basement, I've never heard any shooting, any sound of the range at all. And I've been in there quite a bit. But yours is outside, and so that obviously would make the difference.
Well, and the ranges have changed. When I was on the highway patrol, we had one at Arden Hills.
The
Moundsview area were there, and that after that was developed, people started moving in, and it's kind of like going to the airport with the range, that they come to the hazard afterward, and you have different things, but when I first started, you used to have a shooting range, and it was shooting at targets. They're standing there, and there wasn't any movement. Nowadays, they have people, dummies, if you will, rising up, and some are friendly and some are not, and you shoot them, and if you shoot somebody in there, they don't have a gun. Well, that's bad, but basically, and you know that better than ever now. But that's kind of you just can't do the shooting by
the old ways,
the old fashioned way.
Yeah. Any other questions about this proposal? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator.
Thank you so much.
And the last project for the evening, are we in the evening yet? Not quite. Is Senator Dahl and a public safety facility in Northfield. Everybody, this is Senator Dahl's first bill. of his new Senate career. So I guess we have to be kind.
Wait, what happened to hazing?
What happened to hazing? That's a House thing.
Oh. Been there, done that.
Yeah. Whenever you're ready, go right
yes,
ahead.
Yes, Madam Chair, committee members, thank you so much. And you're right. I was sworn in January 22nd, but I really only feel like I've been a senator for 2 days. And I will always remember my first time testifying, and it's right here. So it's a privilege to be here and to be bringing this bill forward. This is an appropriation they're asking for approximately $6 million for a public safety regional emergency operations facility in Northfield, and they are committing approximately $4 million from the city itself. This facility is not meeting the needs of today. It was constructed in 1971. It is landlocked. There's a busy intersection on the north and west side and a river that flows behind it. Since this facility was built, the population has increased 90%. The county has increased by 50%. And since 1997, 83% increase in number of police officers and a 225% increase in calls for service. And that includes, of course, two colleges, which have also grown in that time. I have with me today a couple of people that are actually several people. I'll introduce them quickly, and they will explain a little bit more about the facility that they're proposing. We have Al Roeder, City Administrator, Joel Walensky, Public Services Director, Kathleen McBride, the Finance Director, Michelle Clausen, a Management Intern, and John Dennison, our City Council Member, and on my left here, Mark Taylor, Captain of the Northfield Police Department. And I believe City Administrator Al Roeder will be going first.
Okay, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you this evening, late afternoon.
There you go.
I have good news for you today. This is not a training center. This is a regional safety center, emergency operations center in the city of Northfield. We are requesting $5 million for a building design and build, $1 million for equipment. The city's contribution is $4 million to contribute toward this. We are asking for no further state subsidies or operating expenses, as the city of Northfield and its partners will take on the responsibility of all of the operating expenses. Very briefly, I want to take you through a little bit of a history. This, as Senator Dahl said, this was constructed in 1971 in our current facility. Current space is 21,400 square feet. We have a need of 33,000 square feet. Our new facility, according to a complete facilities feasibility assessment done by Hay Dobbs, shows that 33,000 square feet would allow us ample space for our existing operations to meet the needs of our growing staff and equipment. One of the problems that we have, as an example, is we do have some of our current administrative assistant staff housed in closets that have been converted to office and workspace. Very inappropriate. Unfortunately, we are out of space. The new equipment that are required for providing fire protection to the colleges in particular will not fit in our current facility either. We're asking for your assistance in this area. The current site is also unbuildable. We cannot expand on our current location, primarily due to the floodplain. Our Emergency Operations Center is situated just a couple hundred feet from the Cannon River, which is not lend itself for being a good spot for an EOC in case of a flood event. As we know, those do happen in Minnesota. Currently, we have some regional opportunities that we have been exploring. We've had people express interest in sharing space in Northfield, as we are one of the larger communities right on the outskirts of the seven-county metro area. Those include the DNR, the Immigration and Custom Enforcement Agency, Minnesota State Patrol, State Fire Marshal, BCA, Rice and Dakota County Sheriff's Departments, as well as the local National Guard unit. Current regional operations that are taking place in Northfield at the Safety Center today. It is our Emergency Operations Center for Northern Rice County. We offer bookings for area municipalities who will bring their know, what do we call them?
Bookings. Arrests.
Criminals. Yeah. They'll come to Northfield. They'll book them in Northfield. It is more efficient for officers' times from some of the smaller area agencies, and then they will take them to the jail in Faribault. We are also the host site for the Marine Army radio system, which covers a three-state area. Northfield is it when it comes to the MARS radio system. We are the three-county inoculations site designated for pandemic, and we store and man the rural fire department and rescue units for the rural fire department that serves portions of two counties, and I believe it's 10 townships. We cover a significant portion of I-35 for fire and rescue as well. Our local hospital, which is a city-owned and operated hospital, is also in need of storage and operating space for our EMS system, and we are working with them to create space. One of the issues that we have in coming to you with our bonding request is the city of Northfield has the pleasure of having two colleges, two world-class colleges in our community. That also creates a challenge for us because in excess of 38% of our tax base is tax-exempt. We wouldn't trade them for anything, but it does create some challenges for us when it comes to funding. We also have a fair amount of regional demand for service delivery, and we feel like we can meet that demand with this funding request. We will be funding our share of the project through a capital improvement bonding process, and the city is committed to that. Included in the packet that we have for you are a series of photographs. I would let you go through those yourselves at your leisure, but it will show you several of the issues that we're facing, including hallways that have been converted into storage rooms, file cabinets, et cetera, because that's all of the space that is available to us today. Our turnout gear, in particular for the fire department, our firefighters have a total of about 23 inches between the fire trucks and their turnout gear in which to dress when they have a call. And again, it's a very challenging situation for us. All of this construction is designed to be to meet LEED standards. In our facilities, the city of Northfield has made a commitment, not just with the safety center, but with a renovation in the city hall. We're looking at a library expansion and some other needs within the city facilities area, but they will all meet LEED standards. Currently, we are negotiating a land swap with MnDOT for a site on for a new safety center. Our current safety center is located on an extremely busy intersection on the corner of Highways 19 and Highway 3. This would move the safety center about 10 blocks south to the intersection of Woodley and Highway 3. It would be a better access point for our safety center, in particular the fire department, providing them both east-west access as well as north-south access. And the land swap would put the MnDOT truck center adjacent to the current public works facility for the city of Northfield, creating some synergies for operations for both of us in that area, too. With that, I would open it up to questions.
Thank you. Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, and Mr. Roeder, is your service area going to expand with the construction of this regional safety center?
Our service area for fire protection will not expand as a result of this. Currently, we're covering with our 36 volunteer paid on-call firefighters. It's as large as it can be. We just are at our capacity with that. The service area that would expand would be the regionalization of the partnerships, if you will, the BCA, DNR, ICE, being able to offer both Dakota and Rice County Sheriff's Departments space to have satellite offices for their officers, expand our ability to do bookings in Northfield for the other municipalities in the area of Northfield.
I guess I'm never quite sure when we talk about a regional center what we mean. So, really and truly, you're just going to continue to serve the needs of the Northfield community with this new facility.
In essence, what we are trying to do is expand the services available to the greater Southern Dakota and Northern Rice County areas. Currently, there are services that we would like to provide that other agencies are wanting to provide in a more efficient manner that we are not able to.
Other questions? You're still in the process of trying to put together the land swap and all of those kinds of things. Am I correct?
Those negotiations have been taking place with the land swap for some time. We are nearing what we believe to be the completion of that. We anticipate construction in 2008 as of yet.
And how big a project is this all total?
The total project cost is just shy of $9 million on the facility. We're asking for $5 million on the bonding bill. The city, again, is contributing just shy of $4 million on the building portion of it.
And the equipment, you said $1 million for equipment?
$1 million for equipment includes primarily fire apparatus, specifically a ladder truck, a larger ladder truck than what we currently have. Because of the larger buildings that we are now servicing, our equipment will not reach those buildings, so it creates a bit of a safety issue for some of our students, in particular at the colleges.
I don't know whether we've ever paid for a ladder truck for anybody before. Senator Berglund, you've been on that committee for a really long time.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess in my mind it would be a stretch to call this a regional center, but what would happen if this were not included in the state's capital bonding bill?
At this point, I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
That's okay. Mostly I'm just saying it so that if anybody goes back and listens to the tape in the future, they'll have a clue who you are when you speak. That's all. So just ignore me.
Thank you. I'll be more patient. At this point, we are looking at all of our funding options. We do see this as a significant need for not just the city of Northfield, but for our region. We do consider this to be a regional issue. We have regional challenges that we're trying to address, regional needs to be met. But, you know, at this point, this is the most logical place for us to start. We're going through a complete facilities analysis in the city of Northfield, not just with our buildings, but with all of our infrastructure. And this is the most pressing need. This is the number one priority as adopted by the city of Northfield.
Madam Chair, Mr. Roper, don't get me wrong. I believe you need to build a new facility. The question is, should the state of Minnesota build a new fire and police station for every community that needs one? That's the issue in my mind.
Senator Rosa?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Roeder, I'm intrigued by your comment about the fire truck. And I know in my district there are many communities that need fire trucks, and of course it's impossible to fund those. But have you looked into the USDA, the Rural Development Fund? They do have federal money for fire trucks, and they often do not utilize all that money for the fire trucks. So if you'd like, Senator Dahl, I can give you that information of who to contact. For your area, I believe he would be out of Waseca. And the gentleman that runs that area can give you more information about the grant proposal, and it's a very good possibility you get your fire truck that way.
Madam Chair, Senator, I would be more than willing to look into that again at this point. It does not appear that we are eligible for that funding, but I'd be happy to look into that again. It has a lot to do with the guidelines that are set by USDA, whether I believe they call it the income guidelines or the way Northfield falls into the national income guidelines. So, okay. But I'd be happy to look at that again.
Okay. I'm just offering.
All right. Other questions? Anybody else going to speak? Your folks are here just to answer questions?
I'd like to make one comment, if I could, please. You know, to get back to the regional.
Start with your name again.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mark Taylor. I'm captain with Northfield Police Department.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Sure.
I think the regionalization part of this project is that we have, like, a state fire marshal that lives and works out of our area. We have state patrol. And the issue is for them is that they probably have to drive maybe up to the Twin Cities or down to Rochester to have an office to work out of, to interview people, or just have an office to organize, have a computer, have their work type things with them. So, and that's been our discussion with those folks, is that they're looking for, and they see Northfield as an opportunity in a place that's in a good location regionally to be able to house them. Currently, we can't do it because we are just totally out of space. So that's kind of what got our wheels turning on. This is a regional opportunity. We know we need a new safety center, so we thought the time was right to look at maybe working with other agencies. As Mr. Roeder said, the State Patrol, the BCA, some of those agencies.
Senator Brooke.
Well, Madam Chair, you know, I don't mean to be too harsh, but $6 million to have somebody use an office sometimes. We could lease an office space in Northfield someplace. It would be a lot more cost-effective from the state's point of view.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund.
Senator Dahl.
I agree, but it really is about, again, the collegiality. It's about sharing resources. It's about trying to come together and use space effectively. And obviously, there is a need for this, but it would be more of a regional center if we had a facility that brought people together like that.
That's all the questions. Thank you. Yeah. Senator Ingram.
Madam Chair, yeah, thank you. Senator Burgley, you came up with a figure of $6 million worth of rent? Where did you come up with that?
They're asking for $6 million.
Okay, the total project. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And the benefit to the state is that we would have an office we could use for the State Patrol when they wanted to stop in. And for the DNR? Is that
BCA?
The BCA. BCA.
Yeah, Madam Chair, there's a lot of state entities here, and I understand what the Senator's talking about, getting groups like that together. You're talking a BCA agent. How far away would the BCA agent be stationed if he didn't have a position there? Or would the state have to rent an office for that agent?
I believe right now would be probably the closest would be St. Paul, I believe, from our location.
How about your Madam Chair, State Fire Marshal, could you go down that list? It's in the presentation. I'm just wondering, are they in your town now, or would you be bringing them together under the one roof, or are they?
The state fire marshal that works in that part of the state actually lives either in or right around Northfield. I know that for sure. The state patrol, I think, is probably the same situation where they're located, you know, either in the Twin Cities or Rochester, probably to the south, southeast. Mankato would be the next closest that way. Rice County, obviously, the National Guard is a local unit that would like to have some space in our facility. The DNR, I believe, again, would be Mankato. And ICE, I think, would be St. Paul would be the closest.
Yeah. Madam Chair, just one more follow-up. You have Rice and Dakota County Sheriff's Department. That would be for storage rental or storage area, or would you combine the offices in this?
Well, I think a satellite office, as was mentioned earlier.
Okay.
We're on
I'm
the
sorry,
north end of Rice County and on the very south end of Dakota County, which creates real issues for Dakota because that's a lot of their population isn't in that part of their county. So, again, that would be the reason for that.
Thank you. I stepped out for that part of the information. Thanks.
Any other questions? Thank you all, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Members, I have some reminders. Senator Ingebretson is now the new ranking member in our committee because Senator Neville went off to be a judge. Senator Limmer is going to join our committee. He wasn't able to be here today. Our next meeting is Monday, and we will continue with bonding proposals. And we will be here till we get done. And so we will figure out some dinner and whatever else we need. Next Wednesday, a week from today, then our job will be to figure out what our list is, our ranks to send over to the bonding committee. So that's what we'll be doing on Wednesday. If anybody wants to go to see the Minneapolis EOC, the existing one, and then the fire training facility and where they're proposing to put the new EOC, that will take place this Friday at 10 o'clock. Talk to Alice if you wanted to join up on that tour. Let's see, what else? Let me go ahead and reintroduce people. We've got some new folks here. Alice Seufert's our committee administrator. Nikki Mabry is my LA.
Carissa Maslowski is our committee page this year. And we've got Linnea Michelson from Minority Research, Megan Johnson from Majority Research. And we've got Kara, whose last name I still can't remember, Josephson, who is one of our pages for our committee this year. So we've got a few new faces, and we've got a really good team of people to work with. So
these two guys.
Oh, yeah, and these two guys, the Brain Trust. Yes. Chris and Chris and Ken, of course.
There you go.
All right, so we have our work cut out for us, and we will see everybody on Monday, if not before, and we are adjourned. Thank you.